We're going to look at the synagogue miracle today that probably took place in Capernaum. And it's a continuation of the stories in Mark where the Lord Jesus is going back and forth on the northern region of the Lake of Galilee or the Sea of Galilee, going from one side to another to do miracles on either side. Now, the Lord has got a plan for this. He doesn't just sort of get in the boat and float around and go from one place to another without having a plan. God has planned everything. Even though we don't understand it and we can't grasp that plan, we're going to see some aspects of the story together where that plan does become apparent. So I want to read Mark 5 from verses 21 to 43 to get a sense of the whole group of passages that we're going to be going through this morning, and then we'll start into the sections. So the text reads, "And when Jesus was passed over again by ship unto the other side, much people gathered around him, and he was nigh unto the sea. And behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name. And when he saw him, he fell at his feet, and he besought him greatly, saying, My little daughter lieth at the point of death. I pray thee, come and lay thy hands on her, that she may be healed, and she shall live. And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him and thronged him. And a certain woman that had an issue of blood 12 years, and had suffered many things of many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was nothing bettered, but rather grew worse. When she had heard of Jesus, came into the press behind and touched his garment. For she said, If I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. And straightway the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body as she was healed of that plague. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that virtue had gone out of him, turned him about in the press and said, Who touched my clothes? And his disciples said unto him, Thou seest a multitude thronging thee, and sayest thou, Who touched me? And he looked around about to see her that had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth. And he said unto her, Daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace and be whole of thy plague. When he yet spake, there came from the ruler of the synagogue's house certain which said, Thy daughter is dead. Why trouble us the master any further? As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he saith unto the ruler of the synagogue, Be not afraid, only believe. And he suffered no man to follow him, save Peter and James and John, the brother of James. And he cometh to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and seeth the tumult, and them that wept and wailed greatly. And when he was come in, he saith unto them, Why makest thee this ado and weep? The damsel's not dead, but sleepeth. And they laughed him to scorn. But when he had put them all out, he taketh the father and the mother of the damsel and them that were with him, and entered in where the damsel was lying. And he took the damsel by the hand, and he said unto her, Talitha kumi, which is being interpreted, Damsel, I say unto thee, arise. Straightway the damsel arose and walked, for she was of the age of 12 years. And they were astonished with a great astonishment. And he charged them straightly that no man should know it, and commanded that something should be given her to eat. Now let's look at the sections of this and see the importance of these two events here. The synagogue ruler's daughter getting healed, and the woman with this issue of blood. The text starts in Mark 5, verses 21 to 23, where it says, And when Jesus was passed over again by ship unto the other side, much people gathered unto him, and he was nigh unto the sea. And behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and when he saw him, he fell at his feet and besought him greatly, saying, My little daughter lieth at the point of death. I pray thee, come and lay thy hands on her, that she may be healed, and she shall live. Now, this is a really interesting tool here, a grammatical, literary tool that's used to sandwich one story in the middle of another. And it's done to emphasize the story It's done to break the story up, to create some tension so that there is some anticipation of what it is that's going to happen on the second half of the principal story. So that's what's taking place here. It's this woman who's hemorrhaging, is that story is being placed in the middle of the story of healing Jairus' daughter. Now, what it does is it indicates a lapse of time, it heightens the tension, and it draws attention, more attention, to the synagogue ruler. And it's an interesting technique that's done here. Jesus left the Gadarenes, and that's what we looked at in our last session. He was over on the northeast side, and he had driven the demons out of this demoniac man, healed him. The demons wanted to go someplace other than their ultimate end, which is the lake of fire. So we allowed them to go into the swine. We remember what happened. The swine, being possessed with these demons, ran off a cliff. There was at least 2,000 of these swine. And the people that owned these swine, the husbandmen that owned these swine, they were angry about this. I mean, there's their financial investment going down the tube here. So they wanted him to get out. Get out of here, Jesus. They didn't care about anybody getting healed. They just saw the financial loss of their business, of their enterprise. They wanted him to get out of there. So he goes across the northern region of the Lake of Galilee to the other side, and he's getting a much better welcome. As a matter of fact, the people are waiting on the shore for him, including Jairus. He probably went to Capernaum because that was his home base when he was over on the northwest side of the Lake of Galilee. It's important to get an understanding of the use of the synagogues, especially in the Galilean region, where people couldn't easily get to the temple or frequently. They met in synagogues. They were places of learning and teaching, especially on the Sabbath. And they would bring in itinerant preachers, or they would bring in officials from Jerusalem in order to clearly explain the scripture in a professional manner to the people in the synagogue. So they got some professional education. And Jesus would frequently go into these synagogues and teach. And we're going to look at that in our next session next week about how he was teaching in these synagogues. The ruler of the synagogue would have been an appointed position, or it was an individual who had helped start the synagogue to bring teachers in so they would understand what the Bible said and how to explain it, how to understand it. And the rulers were usually very, very important people in the community, a position of high esteem, and it was a very visible position. So this was not just somebody that happened to be in the synagogue. This was a member of the community that was hugely admired by the population. So here comes Jesus with this enormous crowd waiting for him on the shore before he even gets off of the boat. And Jairus approaches him, and he's on his hands and his knees. Can you imagine a governor or one of our elected officials coming up to a minister and getting on his hands and his knees? There's a level of pride that goes into position that stops people from doing things like that. This guy didn't have it, though. He was worried about his daughter. She was sick, very, very sick. Now, the text doesn't tell us exactly what she had, but she was near to death. She wasn't dead, but she was near to death. Jairus was convinced that Jesus could heal her. He wasn't speculating. He wasn't saying, well, if you can. He knew, rock solid faith. He knew that Jesus could heal her. And this is an important aspect of the story, that she wasn't dead, and he knew that Jesus could heal her. He knew that Jesus had this power, and he believed that Jesus could do exactly as he said he would do. So Jesus decides to go with Jairus. The text moves on and says, and Jesus went with him, and much people followed him and thronged him. We've got to understand this as not just happening, but God planning these things. We're going to see this as the story opens up. It's important to see how many people were following Jesus. They walked, they waited on the beach, he lands, they crowd around him. And the use of the word thronged here is important to see because it means to literally press in violently. I mean, they're clamoring to get at him, so much so that people had to push them away. People in that environment didn't have the modern health care that we have. They didn't have the ability to get through things like this daughter that was on, you know, it was near to death. And they saw Jesus healing and they wanted it. They wanted it bad. So they were swarming around him on his way to Jairus' home. Now comes the parenthetical story of the woman with the hemorrhaging. And a certain woman, which had an issue of blood 12 years and had suffered many things of many physicians and had spent all that she had and was nothing bettered but rather grew worse. Now she was hemorrhaging vaginally for about 12 years. Surprised that she lasted this long. She didn't bleed out. There's something wrong when that happens. There's an infection of some sort, or there's something that is wrong when that's happening. The physicians couldn't help her, but they took all her money. She spent everything that she had trying to get better. Nothing stopped the blood flow, and her personal savings were depleted as a result of this. The condition worsened. It wasn't that it just stayed at the status quo. It got worse. She was desperate. Absolutely desperate. And within Israel, someone that would have this issue of blood, as the text says, would be quarantined. You had to be ostracized from the general population and couldn't go near anyone else. Now, the leaders of the community placed this stigma on her. It was done primarily for sanitary reasons within the Mosaic law to quarantine somebody that had a issue of some sort, and this was just one that was put into the Mosaic law that required a quarantine. So did leprosy and a few others. If it was something that they couldn't cure, they didn't want to affect the rest of the population. Now, it's important to see what the Jewish legal situation is here and how the Mosaic law mandated that a person with this condition be separated out. And you add to this how impoverished she was, so you can really see the strength of her motivation for getting this healing and pushing through this crowd to get to Jesus. Look what Leviticus 15, verses 25 to 33 say about this issue. And this is what they were living with at the time. And if a woman have an issue of blood many days, not in the time of her impurity, meaning her menstruation, or if she have an issue beyond the time of her impurity, all the days of the issue of her uncleanness, she shall be as in the days of her impurity. She's unclean. Every bed whereon she lieth, all the days of her issue shall be unto her as the bed of her impurity. And everything whereon she sitteth shall be unclean as the uncleanness of her impurity. And whosoever touches those things shall be unclean and shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the evening. But if she be cleansed of her issue, then she shall number to herself 7 days, and after that she shall be clean. And on the eighth day she shall take unto her 2 turtle doves or 2 young pigeons and bring them unto the priest to the door of the tent of meeting, and the priest shall offer the one as a sin offering and the other as a burnt offering, and the priest shall make atonement for her before Jehovah for the issue of her uncleanness. Thus shall ye separate the children of Israel from their uncleanness, that they die not in their uncleanness when they defile my tabernacle that is in the midst of them. So this is the law of him that have an issue. and of him whose seed of copulation goeth from him, so that he is unclean thereby, and of her that is sick with her impurity, and of him that hath an issue, of the man and of the woman, and of him that lieth with her that is unclean. So there's more in this passage than just pertains to our story, but the issue is they had rigorous, firm, sanitary rules for someone who had this condition. It is not a wholesome, healthy condition. We're talking about something beyond her normal monthly period. It's talking about some sort of an infection. And it was dealt with in ways that they had quarantined her. Now, she was considered unclean, and she couldn't do anything that belonged to anyone else, which makes the story even more poignant because, here, look at what's going on. She wants to go up to the master and touch his clothes. And she's not allowed to do this. So she was violating the Mosaic law. She was forced to separate from anybody else in Israel until a priest had declared her clean so that she wouldn't infect anybody else. So she approaches Jesus. Now watch what happens here when she approaches Jesus. When she had heard of Jesus, came in the press behind and touched his garment. For she said, if I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. And straight away the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. So look at this. She exhausted all the measures that she had, spent all her money. The doctor says, we can't help you, you know. Plus, you don't have any more money, so we're not going to do anything for you. They're not going to work for free. But she knew of Jesus. Everybody knew of Jesus. We showed you a map several sessions ago of all the people of the different regions that were coming up to Galilee. It was the entire country of Israel. And all she's thinking of is, I just may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole, I'll be well. She knew the embarrassment that she suffered by being squeezed out of society was about to be over. She believed that he could heal her. She didn't hope that she would get healed. She knew she was going to get healed, and that's the important aspect of this story. Jairus knew Jesus could heal his daughter. This lady with this issue of blood knew that Jesus could heal her. Now, it's interesting, is the Matthew account, of which, now this appears in three of the Gospels, so it's an important story that all three of the Gospel writers wanted to make this known to us. The Matthew account specifies the specific spot on Jesus' gown that they touched, or she touched. She touched the hem. The hem in the ancient Israelites' garments was extremely important. It had spiritual significance that I think is helpful for us to understand. The word translated for hem, or fringes or tassels, is called a tzitziot. And they would be required to make these gowns in a sort of a four-corner design. And the four corners would be in compliance, if you will, with their Bible instructions, the Torah instructions, first five books of the Bible. Look what it says in Numbers 15 here, verses 37 to 41. And Jehovah spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and bid them that they make them fringes on the borders of their garments throughout their generation, that they put upon the fringe of each border a cord of blue. And it shall be unto you for a fringe, that ye may look upon it and remember all the commandments of Jehovah and do them, and that ye follow not after your own heart and after your own eyes, after which ye used to play the harlot, but that ye remember and do all my commandments and be holy unto your God. I am Jehovah your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. I am Jehovah your God. So the ancient Israelites, in compliance with the Mosaic law, wore these four-cornered outer tunics that went over their gowns, and it had these tassels or the tzitziot tied to the four corners. They were an outward display of a man's compliance with the Mosaic law. There were 613 knots on these tassels, representing each of the 613 commandments in the Mosaic law, and they hung on the garments for everyone to see. So it was on display. And it's interesting that the Hebrew word that frequently gets translated out as the Jewish law is the halacha. The halacha. And that is the word for go or walk, travel. I travel, ani holek. So it's walking in or traveling or going in the law of God. So it was an outwardly display of what was inside compliance with God's laws, doing what God said. So God intended these knots and these tassels to be a constant reminder of his word. The Jews today wear what's called a tallit. In deference to this, it has fringes. It's like a big long scarf, and it's got the blue and white colors, and it's got a whole bunch of tassels and knots on it. Instead of the gown, this is what they wear. The Pharisees of his time would wear these, but they didn't have God inside of them. The Pharisees were deceivers, and he condemned the Pharisees frequently. They would manifest a real good front, but inside they were corrupt. Matter of fact, Jesus called them whitewashed tombs, whitewashed sepulchres. He said, you guys look great on the outside, man, there's nothing on the inside. You are not genuine followers of God. So this woman knew that Jesus was God. She knew he had this power. She knew he wasn't lying. He wasn't deceiving. He was the genuine person that she could get healing from. She was convinced that he was the living word of the written word. This is the Bible teaches. And sure enough, as soon as she touches the hem of his garment, she was healed. Immediately, she touched the hem of the garment, and 12 years of misery were over. She knew it. She could sense it in her body that I have been healed. Her humiliation and her sickness had ended. Look what Jesus does immediately after that. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that virtue had gone out of him, turned him about in the press and said, who touched my clothes? And his disciples said unto him, he seeth the multitude thronging thee, and sayest thou, who touched me? In other words, there's all these people here, and you want to know somebody touched you? And he looked around about to see her that had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth. And he said unto her, daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace, and behold the plague. Now Jesus knew what had happened, and he knew who had done it, but he openly displayed what had happened to bring this issue out and show people that it was her faith that did this. She believed he could do it. He did it. And he attributed it to her faith. You know, there's a lot of people that were thronging around him. And his disciples said, you want to know who pressed in on you? Come on. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of people here trying to push in on you. But she was special. She had a genuine belief, not a phony belief, not somebody that was considering whether Jesus was who he claimed to be or not. She knew exactly who he was, and she wanted it. She had the faith, and she knew, if I could just touch the hem of his garment, I'll be healed. this humiliation that I've been experiencing for these 12 years will be over. I can go to the priest and say, look, I'm clean. I'm clean. They declare me clean. Let me get back into society. Jesus knew what had happened. He knew that the power had gone out from him. And it's interesting is that she fell down before him and told him all the truth. This faith is the essence of salvation. There's no other way to appropriate the blessings of God other than exercising your faith. Your faith is putting trust in Jesus. It goes beyond reading a pleasant story and saying, interesting, wow, this guy's got some power. No, it goes way, way beyond that. And that's what happened here. This lady believed him to the point of, I'm doing it. I'm trusting in him. I'm going to touch the hem of his garment. I know he can do this. And he did. This is a physical example of healing, of the spiritual regeneration that takes place when somebody trusts Jesus. The trust in Jesus by putting our faith in him and who he is and what he does leads us to eternal life, and there's no other way. The story moves on out of this parenthetical story, this little sandwich story here, back to the main story. And there's a reason for this delay here that I want you to see. Let's look at the text here, Mark 5:35-38. While he yet spake, there came from the ruler of the synagogue's house certain which said, thy daughter is dead. Why troublest thou the master any further? Soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he saith unto the ruler of the synagogue, be not afraid, only believe. And he suffered no man to follow him, save Peter and James and John, the brother of James. And he cometh to the house of the ruler of the synagogue and seeth the tumult of them that wept and wailed greatly. So it's important to see these two facets of this story here, the two key components of this story. One, that faith is crucial to get the benefits of what Jesus offers. God provides gifts to us, but if we don't have the faith to take them, we don't get them. A gift has to be received in order for that gift to be effective. I mean, I can put a gift out here and say, here's your gift. If you don't take it, you don't have the gift. That's what faith is. It's that trust. And two, Jairus' daughter's death enabled Jesus to raise her from the dead, not just heal her. And he waited. He waited. He took the time with this woman who had the issue of blood to stop on the way to Jairus' house to handle this issue. He wanted to let this girl die. He did the same thing with his friend Lazarus. Lazarus was sick also unto death, and Martha and Mary, Lazarus' sisters, in another story, called for Jesus to come and heal him. Jesus delayed several days, and he cried over this. Jesus wept over that. But he wanted Lazarus to die. So when he got there, he was assured that Lazarus was dead because he was decomposing and there was an odor that was coming from him. Lazarus' sister said, man, you don't want to go in there. He's starting to smell. That's exactly what he wanted, because he wanted everybody to know that God has the power to do these things. And he raised Lazarus from the dead. And that's what's taking place here. Jesus delays. She goes from sickness to death. Because he wanted people to know that this is genuine. This is not some sort of chicanery or sleight of hand or I'm helping this daughter out here. All of a sudden she feels better. No, they knew she was dead because the mourners had come in. So some people tried to stop Jesus from coming. Maybe they were well-intentioned, and maybe they weren't. Or maybe they thought, well, he can heal some physical things, but not death. I mean, we see him, the great physician here, healing other people when his fame is well known and gone out across the entire nation of Israel. But he says to Jairus, in other words, don't be led astray by them, Jairus. Don't listen to them. You be not afraid, only believe. Now, Jesus knew the power of these naysayers to dissuade a real believer or somebody that was trusting in Jesus away from him. He condemned the Pharisees in Matthew chapter 23 for leading people away. He said to the Pharisees, you guys aren't going into heaven. He called it the kingdom. You're not going in and you're keeping others who would go in out. That's exactly what Jesus is doing here. He said to Jairus, stay away from them. Don't pay attention to them. You just believe. You've got this faith. You've got this belief. Just believe. So he approaches the home. And interesting, as he does in some other important events, he brings his inner circle in. Peter, James, John, and Andrew. Now, he didn't bring Andrew in this time, but he brought Peter, James, and John. So there's this large amount of commotion going on in there. And at that time, they would bring in, for the wealthy people, the prominent people in the community, they'd bring in professional mourners. Now, we look at this a little strange, but they would be similar to us having soft music and people with well-spoken management of a funeral home or flowers or something. They had professional mourners. And they would create an atmosphere of sorrow and woe depending upon what the sense was of the person who had died. Now, this is a young girl, 12 years old, so there's a lot of sorrow about losing a child, especially one so young. They were weeping loudly, and when they did this, they would do it in a, what we call an antiphonal set of woes, if you will. Antiphonal just means you got one group that'll say one thing and the other one will respond to it. And it goes back and forth across the room. The Jews have recited the Psalms this way in singing. The Jews were singing the Psalms long before they were reading them. They were singing them. So this is really strange to us, but that's what was done back then. The text moves on. And when he was come in, he saith unto them, why make ye this ado and weep? The damsel's not dead, but sleepeth. And they laughed him to scorn. But when he had put them all out, he taketh the father and the mother of the damsel and them that were with him, and entereth in where the damsel was lying. And he took the damsel by the hand, and he said unto her, Talitha kumi. Just being interpreted, damsel, I say unto thee, rise. And straightway she rose and walked, for she was of the age of 12 years old. And they were astonished with a great astonishment. And he charged them straightly that no man should know it. And he commanded that something should be given her to eat. So Jesus enters this house and says to the mourners, well, she's not really dead. She's only sleeping. And they know she's dead. So they're laughing at him and saying, who is this guy? Come on. You know, we know she's dead. We can see her. She stopped breathing and everything, you know, and the blood's gone out of her. She's gray and, you know, look at her. Look at her. And this is a complete contrast to the woman with the hemorrhage. These people were just denying what Jesus could do and didn't have the faith or believe in what he could do. Jairus believed that he could do this, believed that Jesus is the living word. So Jesus and these three apostles and the parents leave the rest of the crowd that's wailing and screaming and crying, and they go into the room where she's laying. And he uses an Aramaic expression, arise, young girl. Arise. Now, Jesus spoke Aramaic, Greek, and Hebrew, and probably Latin, because that was one of the languages that was used because of the Roman occupation. This is Aramaic, which is a version of Hebrew. The 12-year-old girl immediately gets up. Not sometime later after Jesus leaves, immediately. Just like the woman with the issue of blood, she was immediately healed. And he commands people to feed her. And this is a clear demonstration that it's not a resurrection to eternal life with a brand new eternal body. This is a coming back from the dead so that she would live out a normal life. Jesus did not want it broadcast out, although he knew it was going to go out. People were going to start telling everybody else, man, we saw this girl come back from the dead. You can't believe what happened. The reason he didn't want this to be broadcast in that manner is he didn't want them to know him as just some magical Santa Claus type person. Man, this you're sick, man, you go to this guy, he's going to do it. He did these miracles for a specific purpose. He did them to prove who he was so people would put their faith in him. He's only staying in this ministry for a short 3.5 years. 1974 years later, the story is still here, showing us that these people had faith unto belief. And that's the essence of this story. Let's pray.